Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters, the Three Musketeers ride again. And we never know, Twisted Sisters and maybe a Twisted Mister or two. But we're never sure about that. We know about each other. So here we are. Hello, ladies. How are you?
Hello, doing good.
Very good.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can. I can.
Do you hear me loud and clear? Yeah, okay. So these new headphones are clearly working.
There you go.
Awesome.
The ESP is tuned in too. See that? Got that. The ESP working well. So anyway, ladies, happy Tuesday. And
Yes.
And Pam, come on and tell us about tonight's show.
Well, tonight's show, absolutely. Well, tonight's show is a pretty easy concept. I just decided. I came across this website called Proverbical, which has proverbs, you know, those little sayings and wise little sayings, you know, from around the world. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to put up some different proverbs from around the world, and I'm going to put up the link to that website. And I'm going to tell people they can be inspired either by, you know, one of the proverbs put up in the contest, or, you know, just use any proverb, you know, either one they come across in researching, or one they already know perhaps from their home country to be inspired by. And it had a great response. The contest filled up with 20 entries. And it was quality and quantity, and definitely great pearls of wisdom throughout the world to be inspired by.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's, I'm definitely looking forward to tonight's poetry, and of course, as always, hanging out with you two and, you know, all the other cool poets.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I read through the entries earlier this evening, and yeah, they're really great. Awesome.
Very nice, ladies. That sounds like it's going to be some fun.
I think so.
Nothing like a good night of poetry. And just so you know, we have a caller. We do have a caller online. We have Bill Schiller joining us, so.
Wonderful.
Good to have you here, Bill.
Welcome, Bill. Is he there?
I'm here. I'm sorry. I just missed you. It's like it jumped in and jumped out. But I'm here. I'm right here listening.
Wonderful. Glad to have you join us. How's it going?
I'm not sure if you're talking to me or someone new. I'm sorry.
Talking to you.
Talking to you, Bill.
Okay, I'm right here. As always, I want to tell you all thank you for everything you do, because I know they're not paying you the big bucks to volunteer your time the way you do. And you help bring so much attention to these writers and keeping people mindful of poetry, but it's also very encouraging, I think.
We're definitely happy to do that.
Well, you know,
for
Bill, the woman who has to, you know, the pull in this place, she pays him next to nothing. It's terrible how she treats him. that's at one of our back, or one of our jokes, you know, our inside jokes. I'll give him a raise, you know, and, you know, nothing from nothing kind of deal. Yeah. Tell him I'm going to dock their pay. It's one of my, it's just one of those things. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Okay, Pam, I'm going to be quiet now. Let you do your thing.
All right. Well, of course, as usual with a Tuesday, I'm going to have us start with a classic poem, which is Proverbs of Chaucer by Geoffrey Chaucer. And it goes like this. What should these clothes thus manifold? Lo, this hot summer's day, after great heat cometh cold, no man cast his pilch away. Of all this world, the large compass will not in mine arms twain. Who so much will embrace, little thereof he shall distrain. The world so wide, the air so renewable, the silly man so little of stature, the green of ground and clothing so mutable, the fire so hot and subtile of nature, the water never in one, what creature that made is of these four thus splitting may steadfast be as here in his living. The more I go, the farther I am behind. The farther behind, the nearer my war's end. The more I seek, the worse can I find. The lighter leave, the loather for to wend. The better I live, the more out of mind. In this fortune, not I, or in fortune. Though I go loose, tied am I with a loin. End poem. And I think, well, it's pretty obvious, you know, that why I chose that for tonight's show, as it was filled with all kinds of little tidbits of wisdom you know, a great classic poet. And Naomi, your thoughts on this classic poem?
Yeah, well, Geoffrey Chaucer, I knew his name, and the Tales of Canterbury, yeah, it's him, he wrote that, and yeah, and known very, very well for, you know, the English poet, for mid-century English poet, and but I had to study him in the Tales of Canterbury. So, yeah, I knew his name told me something. And, yeah, I read over this poem earlier, and, wow, there are, you know, so much to gobble up in this. And he was known as very wise and, you know, very relatable even to this day and age, you know, his words of wisdom. The better I live, the more out of mine is this fortune not or in fortune. Though I go loose, tied with a lounge, the more I go, the farther I am behind. You know, he was known for his wit. And, yeah, his wit and his wisdom and his little bit of humor that he popped in here and there. So, yeah, great, great choice, Pam, for tonight. These great proverbs that are all, you know, through this poem. And I'll let others comment. And I'll be quiet now. Great choice, Pam.
Thank you very much. I thought that was a great comment. I especially like how you comment on Chaucer's character, because, yes, he was known for his wit, so very cool. And, Bill, your thoughts on this classic poem?
Well, it's if I I've never read it before until now, and if it wasn't just someone telling me this was Chaucer, it reminds me almost of Alexander Pope, the little wisdoms in it, and the style alone. And it makes me now wonder how influenced Alexander Pope may have been by Chaucer. But some of it kind of reminds me like a villanelle with this repetition of words. The more I go, the farther behind, the more I seek, the lighter leave, the better I live. Is this fortune? Do I go loose? This whole aspect of someone moving and that motion aspect, how it's repeated so much in the third stanza there, which is really clever. And I think the other really neat thing about it, and why it's such a good example for people who want to reach a higher level like me, who is always trying to be better, And I struggle with, you know, if you study this in the rhyme scheme, and it's just so consistent, it doesn't stray, which is really cool, because, you know, so often you see these rhyming pieces, I do it, and then suddenly the meter, the rhyme scheme gets lost somewhere in the stanza, somewhere within, but the continuity in this is just incredible. And it's really indicative and shows you what a master Chaucer was. I really think this is a really cool selection, Pam.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I like your observation there, especially the comparison of his style to Alexander Pope, which he very well could have been an influence in Alexander Pope's writing. So very cool. And your thoughts on this classic poem?
Well, I thought it was a great choice for tonight. But before I say any more, I want to let you know we have Marvelous Jarvis joining us. I thought I was going to trip
it.
So welcome aboard.
Wonderful.
Hi,
hello, Jarvis. Welcome to the show. Glad you could join us.
It's good to have you.
Thank you, friend. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, as for your poem choice, I think it was a wonderful poem choice. As you said, it held these little tidbits in it, and that was a wonderful lead-in for tonight's show. So excellent job, and enjoyed it. Nice work.
Very cool. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you. And great comments, everybody. And up next, we have The Heart of Loved Ones is Your Strength by Bookworm Dave 227. And Dean, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Let me just make it appear on my screen. The Heart of Loved Ones is Your Strength by Bookworm Dave 227. She has many important characteristics about her. Beauty that is more than skin deep. Brains without the need to be a show-off. Her strength lays with her love, not a love that is for show. Maybe not holding hands or a peck in public, but a gentleness, her kindness. End poem.
Great read, Dean, and a wonderful brevity by Bookworm Dave. Oh my gosh, my brain went blank. Sorry, Bill, your thoughts on this, right?
Well, my first thoughts are how classy this is, because, and I hope it's something that Bookworm Dave actually shares with whomever inspired, because there's such an eloquence here. And I often read so many tributes that some writer may make to the feminine divine or the love in their life. And it sometimes is just so surface level about their eyes, their hair, their form, but it's very surface. So I like how this writer has been able to crawl up under all that romanticism to get, you know, the classic context. And classic, I mean, and what lies underneath the surface. Such as her strength lays with her love, which automatically lets you know that he's writing about someone who has this power.
I like that. I think that's a wonderful thought, Jared. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I really like this poem. You know, it has a tenderness to it, you know, a softness to it. And like Bill just said, it is very classy. You know, just the way it's written, you know, the beauty that is more than skin deep, you know, brains without the need to be a show-off, that's so important. and her strength lays with her love. Not a love that is for show, you know, and in the last lines, but a gentleness, her kindness, you know, and that makes me think of the contest that you had a year ago or so on kindness with those monsters there and and kindness is so important in you know, this day and age, just to be kind-hearted. So yeah, great write here by Bookworm Dave. Bravo.
Oh, definitely. Great comment, Naomi. And your thoughts?
I thought it was a wonderful brevity. I really did. I thought that, you know, as has been stated before, you know, it's that inner beauty, you know, the beauty of, you know, what's all about what's inside. You know, it doesn't have to do with what's going on the outside. I mean, there's a quote out there by one of the actresses, you know, it's you know, all about the different things internally that you know, makes a woman beautiful. But I think it was just really well done. You know, it was a crisp, short, brevity piece in that. Nice work. So thank you, Bookworm Dave.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I did like this because it was a beautifully written couplet and the message of the importance of having a gentle spirit and inner beauty. And Jarvis, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, not just the gentleness that she shows, but the shyness that she's carrying. She's saying, hey, I love you. I'm 100% with you. But I was raised with old school morals and respect, and some of us can relate to that. Not holding hands in public, and so to say, says maybe not holding hands or a peck in public. I mean, that's the way my mother raised us, and with the right morals, codes, and respect that some of these younger ones may have forgotten, she was filling it out, and it was being firm in who she was.
Yep, absolutely. Wonderful comment. All right. And let's see what we have next. All right, up next we have Sky Ribbon by Betty Page. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Of course, absolutely. Sky Ribbons by Betty Page. Unraveling, spiraling, shimmering light cascading, colorful ribbons fly high. Elevating, twirling round, ascending, drifting slowly in kaleidoscopic rainbows. Silky satin, smooth neon, pretty pinks, reds, orange hues, yellow greens, deep blues. Lavender, dark violet, illuminates atmospheres. Sparkles sweet with purest love, rising above sunset high, embracing one another, merge together, two as one. Let love never unravel, hatred causes undoing. Let colors tangle as one, all shapes and sizes spinning, flying high as brand new kites, drifting in philosophy. Enjoy the magic of love. Triple cords strengthen each bond, powerful organic hemp. Never to ever sever. Let words not cut these ribbons, let no violence betray, for ribbons are delicate, angelic, so visceral. True love sparks, ignites us all. End quote.
Wonderful read, Naomi. And what a beautiful write by Betty Page. And Jarvis, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, while expressing and painting a beautiful picture, again, by showing what beauties the sun can put out when you're just in the moment of love. You're in the moment of, you're in a also real moment that you don't want to let go of. And in them moments, you can just grasp. And if you was the other person looking that way, this is what she saw. You know, and to put it in words, elegant as she did, it was fantastic. I loved it. There's nothing else you can say about it.
I think that was a wonderful comment, and I like how you said moments that you want to grasp and hold on to. Very cool, Liv. And Bill, your thoughts?
Oh, my God. The imagery in this is just incredible. That's my immediate thought. But if somewhere along the way we realize this has nothing to do with ribbons in the sky. It's really about the bond between people. And there are all these little hints along the way, embracing one another, merged together to as one. Sparkle sweet with fierce love. Let the colors tingle as one. And I look at these lines and I just think, it's almost to me like it's what I guess an extended metaphor from start to end, and using ribbons to convey this glorious picture, but also a glorious message about connectivity between people who love and this bond, and the beauty of that bond, which is just an incredible way to express that message. Not by talking about people tangled up with one another, but the idea of these graceful, beautiful, delicate ribbons and how they're lifted up into the air. And the more I think about how that figures the people, these ribbons just transcend everything physical about them and become so much more. I think that's incredible what Betty Page has done here.
I like that. I like that. And yeah, I can definitely see that, how the ribbons represent the connectivity between two people. Very cool. And Naomi, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I was just looking up ribbons in the sky. It's a thin line between love and hate. Because, you know, that's in her A.N. And I see that was a song by the Persuaders way back in the time. Sang by Stevie Wonder, too, Ribbons in the Sky. So, and
which
it's a popular
song you recorded, absolutely.
Yeah. A popular wedding song, I see, because I didn't know it. You know, French from Quebec here, you know. I'm getting back. I have to fluff up my cultural knowledge here. What an amazing write by Betty Page. I mean, you know. Wow, you know, that was just a magical to read. That just read by itself almost. You know, like Bill said, of course the imagery, wow, you know, it's everywhere. But like Bill said, I think he summed it up really well. You know, it is an extended metaphor for, you know, those ribbons that attach us. And that we must never cut, you know, that love that reunites us and ties us all together. And like she says, not let no violence betray that love. And very well said, and a beautiful write to that prompt. And be well done, Betty Page.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I really do love the imagery and metaphors in this. The 5-7-5 lines are beautiful. I like how it speaks on the importance of love, but also the importance of standing together. I especially like, you know, where it says, Enjoy the magic of love, triple cord, strengthen each bond, powerful organic hemp, never to ever sever. Let words not cut through ribbons, let no violence betray. And I like how it speaks of the whole idea of, you know, how, you know, hurtful words, angry words, gossip, that kind of stuff can cut the bond between people. And I thought this was really an amazing write and very well done. All right, let's see what we have next. And, all right. Up next, I have put, I Was Deaf to You by Sam Sampson. And Bill, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. I'm just pulling it up, and I got it. Here we go. Again, the name of it is called A Deaf Man May Not Have Heard the Thunder, But He Will Surely Hear the Rain. He will surely see the rain, rather. So this is how it goes. Our journey started your hand and mine while walking step by step. When did it start to wane? How did we lose our starting point? We used to talk of everything. That's how you put me shame. I failed to notice the widening gap. My self-absorption complete until only I would remain. It was as if I was truly deaf to you. I couldn't hear the anguish. I couldn't hear the pain. I may not have heard the deafening thunder, but when you see tears begin to fall, I surely saw the rain. End poem.
Great read, Bill, and what a wonderful write by Sam. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, my gracious. This is, you know, very heartfelt, right? It's really touching. It's you know, it's raw. It's pure emotion, you know, and it's so well written, beautifully written. And, you know, he captured that prompt in a unique way, so cleverly and with such heart. This write has such heart in it. But when your tears began to fall, I surely saw the rain. Wow. You know, beautiful, beautiful, right?
Oh, absolutely. Great comment. And Jarvis, your thoughts?
I agree 100%. The ending, the whole thing's perfect, but you can see how he just pulled his heart straight from his chest, man, and he held it in his hands as he wrote this. And in the beginning, he says, while walking step by step, when did it start to wane? He had no clue, because head over heels in love, and we've all been there. It can be so damaging when it hurts and it hits us the wrong way. But I mean, the point is, the beautiful, elegant words here, and man, it was very touching.
Yep, absolutely. I do have to agree. It is definitely a touching write. And Bill, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thank you. Well, there are several things I just love about this. Is the transition how it actually goes from this period when the two are together and this sense that we begin to see that something's happened and we don't really know what it is. We just know something terrible happened. And by the end, you know, he sees the rain in the form of tears. So you have that whole movement of a relationship from start to end. But beyond the tones of loss, there is this confessional aspect to it where he's expressing his, and he's taking accountability for his part in this. They're saying, I couldn't hear the anguish. I couldn't hear the pain, that it was his self-absorption. So it's such a rare thing to see a writer. I get a feeling that there's something cathartic in this. And if so, it's a very brave person that's able to put their mistakes out and express their own wrong in the thing in a way and put it out there in the world. So I find it's not only beautiful, but brave. And there's one other big thing that jumps out that I think we should all think about. One of the things I've learned on the Our Poetry platform, not that I pay a lot of attention to it, but I think there are people that pay a lot more attention to it than I do. When you write a piece, you notice at the bottom how it has that whole auto-ranking system where you're stored and you want to try to get that number as high as you can for whatever that's worth. So I mention that because over time, I've begun to learn what kind of words that auto went for will fault you for. Like tears is a word that it always identifies as weak. Same with pain. And there's other terms of the word surely. It hates surely. So these kind of phrases, when you incorporate them in a poem, the auto-rank will penalize you for it. But saying that and now hearing this and reading this poem, it just shows me how magnificent those words are combined in the way they are in this. It makes me question the integrity of that auto-ranking tool. But this is a gorgeous poem for one of the reasons I identified earlier.
Absolutely. And you're right, it does great comment, and it definitely has a confessional poetry style to it. I really thought this was a wonderful emotive write. I really particularly like the line, I failed to notice the widening gap, my self-absorption complete. The whole idea of being so focused on yourself that you don't really see what the other person is going through until it's too late, until you're looking at the rain and looking at the fact that the gap cannot be closed. So just an amazing write and very well done. And all right, let's see what we have next. All right, so. Up next, we have the two-seater Cessna Terns by Ken Smith. And Jarvis, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yeah, I'd love to. The two-seater Cessna Tern. Above the water, you could see basement foundations of homes of the lost villages, gaping mouths caught, and last moans before the river washed over them, and then the rustle of jot up leaves, a priest's black robes, brushing the exhausted earth while over the Mohawk Island, a shaman had taken the old clothes and washed them. The river ran both ways, the current in one direction, and the wind breath of the medicine man blowing the waves the other way. The past still present, and after many hours of sleeping, I woke to find my boat tied to the island shore. End point.
Great read, Jarvis. Thank you. And Ken wrote to the Sioux proverb, before you choose a counselor, watch him with his neighbor's children. I thought, you know, this has wonderful imagery and metaphors. It's quite the intelligent write. Great take on the prompt. I do like how he says the river ran both ways, the current in one direction, the wind breath of the medicine man blowing the waves the other direction. And then the stanza following that, the river ran both ways, kind of made me think of the whole idea of people fighting against themselves or against nature. And the ending line with, I woke to find my boat tied to the island shore, makes me think of that poem that by, was it John Donner, I think, who wrote No Man is an Island. And the idea that we have to be connected to other people, we have to understand our relationship with not only other people, but with the earth in an entirety. So wonderful write by Ken Smith and very well done. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yes, yeah, you know, I really love the words in this poem. You know, the river ran both ways, the current in one direction, and the wind breath of the medicine man blowing the waves the other way, the past still present. You know, you have the priest there who's, you know, taking, you know, the, like the Catholic, they wanted to take over you know, the American, the Indian American, their ways, you know, take them away, but the past is still present. And, you know, the blowing waves the other way, the two rivers that flow, but, you know, they flow one direction, whereas the medicine man is blowing the waves the other way. So, you know, you can rush forward, but, you know, your history has to stay there. And sometimes if you rush too fast, you stumble, you know. And I think that's what happened in the American history. And I think this is well illustrated here and very clever, right, to that prompt, you know, that you have to always, you know, watch out who's there trying to teach, you know, that, you know, our history is there and you have to respect it and you have to listen to it. So awesome, right?
Oh, I like that. I like those observations. That is really cool, and you are so right. You know, like you have to move forward, but at the same time, you can't move too fast or, you know, you can't move too far away. You have to have that connection to your history, not only maybe as an individual person, but also a cultural history. So very cool. Mm-hmm. Yep. And Bill, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm sorry, did you say Bill?
Yes.
Well, I noticed this that quote is from a Stu reference, and I just want to put one quick thing out there. One of the most beautiful books anyone can read is called Black Elk Speaks. And it's written by he was the holy man for the Lakota Sioux. And his experience is really at the heart of what Ken Smith has written here. You know, because in the beginning, can you just picture that airplane that is flying over this encampment and the people that are looking up with their mouths open, like, what is that? Wow. And then they're gaping, he sees their gaping mouths caught in last moons before the river washed over them, which has nothing to, for me, has nothing to do with water washing over them. It's really a statement about this kind of modernity that is overtaking the culture and, you know, the history and way of life. And in some sense, you have the shaman as if clinging to those last remnants of culture and trying to make them clean, and that's why he's washing them in the river. So again, for me, this is about so many more things than what the words would immediately convey. You know, the loss of culture, and I don't know if it's just in the modern world. I think part of it could do from the corruption of faith for a primitive culture like this, because it refers to a priest, black robes, and I think sometimes of the amount of culture, as Pam mentioned, how much has been lost, because even in South America, so much of what we would like to know about the Aztecs and the Mayans was just completely destroyed, burned, when they were conquered by Cortez.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great observations there. And, yeah, you can, as, you know, I'm listening to you guys comment and looking at this rite, there's so much depth to it and the idea of these changes that happen to people and to cultures. So great comments. And, Jarvis, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thank you. I loved it. It's a place where I wouldn't say, okay, lost culture, yeah, but being where I'm from, it's a pop culture as well, because they're thriving, and they're wanting to convey we can't forget where we came from, the hardships that we had, but we have to put our head down and work. We have to move forward, because what happens when we turn around, we get caught up in the past, and the past is nothing but lies and deceptions. Beautiful, beautiful poem. I love how it played out and how he says, don't forget where we came from, and let's move on from there.
I like that. And yes, exactly. We can never forget where we came from. So, and especially if you came from a place of hardship. I mean, it's important either way, but when you come from a place of hardship, you know, you have to remember to learn from that. And so great comments, everybody. All right. Up next, we have The Eye of I by Liquid Mind Forever. And it goes like this. A habitual psychic doubts its way along the stumbled path. How often do we humble ourselves in the lay of our firstborn, nitpicking the ticks burrowed below, leads us by wrath? What scales have risen above the iris of hope, administering lackluster into veins of forlorn? Wherefore the honor, the wisdom, and scope? The tongue in the shoe trumps the tongue of the face. Pretense and grandeur leaves us shriveled and worn. Fantasies, the time-wearied interlace. Fooling yourself laughs for an instant's mirth. Every foothold and port narrows the storm. From the womb of deception, a dollar's worth. Believe what you seek or seek to believe. The choice is yours, be it devilish pawn, the eye of the eye is born to deceive. See with your heart and not with your eye. There's beauty in seeing. There's being kept warm. Live and let live, and you'll live till you die. End poem. And Liquid Mind Forever wrote to the French proverb, you do not always have to believe what you see. And Bill, your thoughts on this poem.
Yeah, I think it's great how he's handled the vertical pronoun. And all of its title, have you noticed that it isn't until the fourth? No, let me count that again. It's in the fifth stanza is the very first time the word I, as in myself, that's the first time that the I is used. It takes five stanzas, which shows you that it's all about, you know, he's talking about how we deal and feel and interact with ourselves. And I just think it's kind of cool that he's dancing around all of that, but also gets to the heart of it. But he can do it in a way where he doesn't have to bring in I this or I that until the fifth stanza. So it's sort of preparing you for what's coming. And it's not like it's coming from him and the focus is on him. You get the sense that the focus is really about all of us, more than just this writer. And the other thing for me that's really cool, what I think is cool. I am someone who really needs to read this more. The other thing that is neat is how in the study of forensics, rhetoric, there is certain attention devices which are used to immediately grab an audience's attention. And that's more an oratorical way of things. But knowing those things is also such a powerful tool in writing. And that's what's been done. Like if you open something with questions, the questions have a way of forcing the reader to pause and reflect on what they just read. How often do we humble ourselves in the lay of the firstborn? What scales have risen above the iris of hope? And again, it's these kind of questions, but they're just eloquent the way they're expressed. And so it's a very deep, this is a very deep bit of writing that full of wisdom too, and how we recognize ourselves and interact with the world, especially in that fourth stanza. Fooling yourself lasts for an instant's worth. You might get a temporary joy, you know, through lying to yourself, but eventually the foothold and port that you might be relying on in that fooling yourself, it narrows and it's worth nothing. So that fourth stanza is what punches so much impact for me in this whole piece.
Oh, absolutely. I like what you have to say. And, you know, great comments all the way through. But, you know, I especially like that you brought up the I not coming in until, like, after a few stanzas or so, you know, like, or, you know, after a while. Because I really think it's important for us as observers and readers of poetry to notice those small details. And I have to agree that asking questions in poetry does give the reader an opportunity to pause and really think along with the poet. So great comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, wow. You know, Deb always writes from such a deep place, you know, of very philosophically and very you know, soft and spiritually too, but this is very philosophical, right? And I love, you know, the metaphors that she comes up with, The tongue in the shoe trumps the tongue of the face. Isn't that amazing? And, you know, and then the, that first stanza, you know, habitual psychic doubts its way along the stumbled path. How often do we humble ourselves in the lace of firstborn, nitpicking the ticks borrowed below leads us by wrath. And, you know, she attacked this prompt, you know, like only she can do it, you know, with just bravo, you know. She really took on this prompt. It's really amazing.
Oh, I have to agree. And, yeah, that tongue in the shoe trumps the tongue in the mouth. I liked that one, too, because it made me think of the saying that action speaks louder than words. So great comment there, Naomi.
Exactly.
Yep, very cool. And Jarvis, your thoughts on this poem?
Absolutely deep. You can tell the spiritual background side of it, how it started off, and how often do we humble ourselves in the lap of firstborn? Because as it reads out, she's reminding how she was taught. Because how many years did the men in the book spend with their firstborns? You know, 1,800 plus years just with their firstborns, the first 10 generations, just to show them that there's a way to come at what you believe, your God, whoever you believe in, there's a way that you come. I just love that first part and how we have to remind ourselves it's not about us. It's about the legacy we leave. What are we going to teach them? How are we going to raise them? Beautiful writing. I just loved it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And you're right. You're right. We are taught to deceive ourselves into thinking, you know, that we should be the center of the universe too often. And really it is about the legacy we leave behind. So great comment. And I love the rhyme and flow in this. The three lines and work really well. The wordplay, especially in the eye of the eye, is born to deceive. And that is so true. The eye of the eye speaking to me on the idea of the ego and how the ego is born to deceive, and how we think too highly of ourselves. And I really like what scales have risen above the iris of hope, with the idea of the scales that fell from the eyes of the from Saul or Paul after he went blind on Damascus. The whole idea that we once saw with hope, we no longer see with hope because we have those scales upon our eyes. So a wonderful, intelligent write by Liquid Mind Forever, and very well done. And all right. Great comments, everybody. And I have to agree, Naomi, definitely fabulous poetry tonight. Quality and quantity. That is for sure.
Absolutely.
Yep. And up next, we have Blood, Sweat, and Tears by Mam Yaw, and we have a recording for that.
Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Walang ligaya sa lupa na di dumihig ng luha. Walang kapayapaan sa lupang higib ng digmaan. Sumilay ang araw sa aking mga mata at ako'y nasilaw sa liwanag nito. Umangon ako at nag-inat, handang humarap sa bawat mundo. Isang hakbang patungong hilaga, isang pagpupugay sa dakong silangan, isang dakot ng asin papunta sa timog, isang sipol sa dakong kanlungan. Binuhat ko ang aking pasanin at nilakbay ang kahabaan ng tumana. Bawat isang maliit na buto ay pinanim upang sa kinabukasan ay anihin. Sa bawat hirap na pinagdaraanan, dugo, pawis at luha ay tumulong upang pamilya at lipunan ay mabuhay at ang kinabukasan ay mabuo. There is no joy in the land unwatered by tears. There is no peace in the nation chained in war. The sun rays alighted on my eyes, and I was blinded by the light. I got up and stretched, ready to face a new day. A step towards the north, a salutation to the east. A handful of salt to the south, a whistle towards the west. I carried my burden and walked the length of the field. Every tiny seed I planted to gather and grip tomorrow. For every hardship I have to go through, blood, sweat, and tears to drown, that my family and society may thrive, and the future be built.
Great read and write, ma'am, y'all. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, that if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then you get to, we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Ma'am Ya wrote to the Filipino proverb, there is no joy in a land unwatered by tears. Being from the Philippines herself, she wrote this poem in both her native language, Tagalog, and then translated it into English. So very cool, very cool. I really appreciated that. And Jarvis, your thoughts on this poem?
Absolutely amazing. I actually was down in that area and got to spend some time on a mission trip down there. And these, the way they bring their words to life and the emotion that they carry. I love this part where it says, the sun rays alighted on my eyes, and I was blinded by the light. I got up and stretched a new day. Because no matter what they're taught, they're going to keep their eyes on the prize. They're going to keep their eyes on that one belief in a very, very Christian background in that area, and they're going to keep their eyes focused on what's more important, because it's the past and the deception from the enemy that traps us and gets us in a snare. Let's just be honest. I've been there myself. But this is so powerful, and I love how the ending came, says that my family and society may thrive and the future will be built. Like, hold firm, everybody. Just hold firm on who you are. Don't change who you are. Stand firm in what we believe. Very, very powerful. I just love it.
It truly is a powerful right. Absolutely. Great comment. And Bill, your thoughts?
Absolutely. I have to say this writing pushed a lot of buttons for me, and I want to explain that without dominating all the time here. You know, I was raised in the South where, you know, we study about the Civil War, and then, you know, you hear a lot about the American Revolution. What they don't focus on in schools so much, which is just almost unforgivable, is we don't talk about World War II. And I think a lot of people don't know that the largest surrender of American forces in history happened in the Philippines when MacArthur and our forces had to pull out, and the country was just overrun by the Japanese, and the horrors that the Filipino people faced, as well as the Americans, that was this composite of Navy, Army, and the Army Air Force, and the victimization, the brutality that the Filipinos confronted with our forces is the kind of horrific things that people just can't imagine. I mention that because the very first book I ever published was on the Bataan Death March and the soldiers from that and Corregidor. They went through, this is the place where the Death March occurred. So here you have this beautiful tropical country, and that first two lines of the poem is, there is no happiness on earth that is not sprinkled with tears for Tamana, which is this area of the Philippines, beautiful and gorgeous. But if you think about the atrocities that happened on those grounds, and if you're familiar with them, it just almost taints everything. And, you know, another fascinating piece of history is, well, you know, America has the most well-trained military of any country in the world. And as good as that is, in the very earliest history of the cavalry units in the American forces, the best and the bravest was the cavalry in the Philippines. And these men on horses would attack tanks from four different ways, knowing that one of them on horseback is going to get murdered, but they don't know which one. But that wouldn't stop them from attacking the tanks. And when I think about Tamana, I think about the people of the Philippines, this beautiful country, and everything they went through, as the first stanza says, in the war-torn land. It's hard to, I mean, beyond the brutality, I mean, the other thing they confronted is, by the time the Japanese arrived, there were no chickens left, there were no cows left, because there was no way of getting food, so that people were starving to death. And it wasn't just the Filipinos and the Americans. Even the Japanese were starving. Oh my God, this is going to sound disgusting, but it is absolutely true because I've seen the pictures. There were some Japanese soldiers who resorted to cannibalism. But when they would kill somebody, they knew that killed the whole person, that, you know, then the body is going to spoil. So they would eat them a little bit at a time, hacking off an arm or a leg so that the person would stay alive. And then they would eat that part and then come back to the person later. It's hard to believe these are the kind of things that happened in World War II. But, as much as we talk about things that Germans did in Europe, what happened in the Philippines is just monstrous. It's hard to believe that a human being to do these kind of things to other human beings. And Cumaná is right there in the heart of that country that is gone from so much horror in a way that most people in our country just aren't aware. But I think if they were, they would view that country and the people from there in a whole other light. That's what all of this writing makes me think of.
You know what? I like that you brought that up. Thank you. I did not know a lot of that stuff. You know, the history is filled with so many horrible and violent moments that humanity has brought upon each other through war, through acts of greed and violence. And I think it's important to discuss those things and in line with poetry, because, you know, that should be part of what poetry does for us, is allows us to discuss, you know, history, ourselves, the future, so much, you know. And it's just fascinating to be able to learn from each other. So very cool. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, in light of what Bill just said, my gracious, it shines a whole new light onto this poem and the depth of it, you know. I take those last two stanzas there. I carried my burden and walked the length of the field. Every tiny seed I planted to gather and reap tomorrow, for every hardship I have to go through, blood, sweat, and tears did flow, and my family and society may thrive, and the future will be built. No, this is such an amazing, deep poem, you know, and I love, you know, when she puts in the stanzas, one step to the north, a tribute to the east, a handful of salt to the south, a whistle in the west. You know, the four, you know, the north, south, east, west there, you know, the looking beyond, you know, and, you know, for that new, that hope that goes on. So beautifully done, man. Yeah, wow, this is absolutely amazing.
Absolutely. I have to agree. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. Yeah, this
and,
is such.
And good luck, Pat, judging this contest.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I might end up with, like, you know, like, I don't know, 15 to 20 finalists, and I'll have to ask you, Naomi, to step in and help me because I'll be completely lost.
Wow.
yeah, but yeah, definitely. Thank you. And I really like this. The powerful lines that really tear at the heartstrings, a wonderful reflection on the chosen prompt. I like that she wrote it in both her native language and English, that she chose a proverb from her culture. And I like that she shares this part of herself with us. I really like this all the way through, but I especially like, I carried my burden and traveled the length of Cumaná. Every single little seed is planted to harvest in the future, and every difficulty that is passed through, blood, sweat, and tears were shed so that family and society can survive and the future will be formed. You know, the importance, on especially in the aftermath of war, focusing on the future and how a people and how their culture will survive. So wonderful, right, Amion? Very well done. And up next we have Great Thoughts by Confess. And Naomi, would you go ahead, please, and give that a read for us?
Yes, no problem. What's that? That's crackling, static.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, there is some status going on. We might have to have people mute themselves when it's not their turn to read or speak.
Oh, there it's gone. Okay. Oh, back again.
Okay.
Not me. I muted myself. Okay.
Okay. Well, anybody who's not Naomi, I need them to mute themselves while she's reading. And thank you. Okay, Naomi.
Okay. Bright thoughts. Intelligence sample this mysterious or obvious sadness that exists. Panting on throwing ships. The cloudy mist suffrages my weak tolerance. Unholy as sinners kiss the opposing views that are set. Strike forward, but no common sense. Explored the rude comments that tear down my defense. Military questions buzzing in, asking not to confess my genetical sexual preferences. All these thoughts running right, but these idiots aren't right. Whose sight or view do you agree has a good fight? End poem.
Great read there, Naomi, and a wonderful brevity by Confess. And she wrote to the quote, clouds can never hide the sun forever, so don't complain about clouds, but never forget to welcome the sun, by Davishish Marita. I really like how she says, panting, I'm throwing fits, the cloudy mist suffrage my weak tolerance. Whole idea of, straightforward but no common sense, explore the rude comments that tear down my defense. The thought of how, we could get so easily defensive and, a wonderful thought-provoking write on the whole idea of how easily temperamental that we get. And, especially when we feel like we're personally insulted, but at least that's the thoughts I get from it. So wonderful, right, Confess, and very well done. And Bill, your thoughts.
Wow. I'm going to be careful now because sometimes the things I think or write about, I'll get these private messages. And so I'm going to be I'm going to try to be diplomatic now. But I relate to everything that's been written in this poem, and one of the things that cools me, that I think is cool, is how he's made this commentary without naming names or speaking specific names. But we kind of get a sense of what's happening because he talks about the cloudy mist. And this is the world we're in now with this division and intolerance, all the noise, the clouds. And, I've gotten to the point where it's hard to watch TV because when I see the news or some commentary, I lose, the suffrages bring out the weakness in my tolerance too, because more and more every day I just want to scream and rage. We're all writers, but here in Florida, they are banning books. And we're talking about classics that could even be things like To Kill a Mockingbird. And on one hand, you can't bring up the books in class, or they're banning them from libraries. But they just started a new policy where if they teach about slavery, they have to teach about how it benefited blacks by teaching them skills. it's so crazy. I figure, what's next? Are they going to start talking about how the Holocaust helped people better understand the way gas works or how to extract teeth, because it's the same kind of mindset. And I'm feeling fit just like this writer. And the thoughts are running right to the right wing, but no, they're not bright. I've seen things lately where they're fighting against Eminem characters or Sesame Street characters. But who is fighting for the clean air and clean water? You know, do we really care about some drag queens in the midst of everything that is going on in this country? I don't. I mean, no, I don't want my children or grandchildren having to, but at the end of the day, I care more about infrastructure, jobs, and taxes than I do about some drag queen putting on a pageant. It means nothing to me. So I'm losing my tolerance, too. And I'm glad, as I read this, that I'm not the only one who's being crazy by the things I'm hearing and seeing. So there's the commentary in this, without being as crass as I want to be. I think this guy could maybe run for senator if he's so diplomatic. Or is that a woman? I'm just trying.
Yeah. Well, great observations there, Bill. And, you know, I think we all have our things that are important to us individually, and, you know, and there are different ways to interpret poetry. And, you know, to me, you just have to kind of say how you interpret a poem and not worry about being wrong. I mean, you know me. I'll just, like, say, like, you know, I comment on poems and, you know, I don't have the best batting average, but, you know, I just keep on commenting and saying what it brings to my mind. So, you know. And let's see. And Jarvis, did you get a chance to read that poem by Confess?
Yeah, and we have a lot of same words we use. I enjoyed it. I can relate because he was venting about how just fed up he is. And we have went from taking the most two powerful things that could get us our eternal to not even knowing who our neighbor is and making enemies. And it's sad. It breaks my heart every day. And the way he sat and just poured this out to say, look, the military's question is buzzing in, asking not to confess, you know, about the way he feels on his preferences. And it breaks my heart being who I am and how I was brought up. But I love the way he worded it because I don't have a filter either. So I commend you.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. And Naomi, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think she really attacked that prompt, you know, right? I think she wrote this right. It just poured out of her. And, you know, I love that prompt. Clouds can never hide the sun forever. So don't complain about clouds, but never forget to welcome the sun. And, you know, it's so true. You know, we complain about this, we complain about that. We get upset over this, we get upset over that. But, you know, we forget that the sun is always shining and there's good. There's good, too. So, you know, I love the way that she wrote this. Very well done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comments, everybody. Thank you. And up next, we have your poem, Bill. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. I'm just blowing that up. And, again, this is a prompt that came from you, Pam, so thank you. This is called The Twisting. The Twisting. All cold days is fooled by the dark. It's same as how doubt hardens soft heart. A respectful toast can be made traumatic by broken glass. A long-time love may be lost by your last act. Lies are bred by distorted facts. Counsel is corrupted by those that abuse trust. Many sturdy metals are disrupted by rust. It's said all gray cats turn black at night. Some claim idiocy is bliss. I can't understand why. The most beautiful of eyes may cast ugly looks. Decorative covers oft conceal worst of books. End point.
Great read and write, Bill. I'm really glad you were inspired. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I really like this, Bill. You know, from the beginning, you know, you attack the subject. All cool shade is fooled by the dark. You jumped right in, and that grasped me. I read this earlier, and you know that first sentence there, it just grasped me and pulled me into the poem. And you know, I just love how you took that quote, you know, that all gray cats turn black at night, and the way that you attacked it, and you know, the way your metaphor of the beautiful eyes that cast the most beautiful of eyes may cast ugly looks. So true. And you know, and as decorative covers often conceal the worst of books, that's so true too. So I love how you attack the prompt in such a clever, witty way. So bravo.
Well, thank you. You know, I mean, all of that stems from this beautiful prompt that here you have this thing that looks one way, but when night rolls around, you just see it as something different. So that single concept, all of this just sort of poured out of that. Thank you, Pam. And it, you know, I mean, I sat there for just a few moments thinking about how something glorious is ruined by this one thing or tainted by it, and everything just kind of came together from that one proverb you provided. So thank you.
I like that. Very cool. And great comment, Naomi. And Jarvis, your thoughts?
Absolutely. Well done, Bill. And I love the part where a respectful toast can be made traumatic by broken glass. A long-time love may be lost by your last act. And it's like they was putting on a persona, like you said earlier, but how are you going to be in front of these people, but how are you going to act in front of them? Almost a catch 22. It's like spirit versus flesh daily. I just love the way you word it. Absolutely great.
I like that. Very cool. Thank you. Great comment. Bill, I have to say this is wonderful. First of all, I like the title, The Twisting, because it makes me think of the idea of how Proverbs cause the twisting and turning of our thoughts. But also I think, you know, and maybe I'm overthinking it, but it gives a nice little nod towards Twisted Tuesdays. This to me makes me think of, you know how like when you see people who make a poem out of song titles, and so like it's making a big picture out of a bunch of little pictures, and that's what I feel like you've done here. You've taken some different proverbs, some I recognize, some you've paraphrased, some maybe ones that you made up yourself, but either way, you've taken all these tidbits of wisdom, and you've made a big picture, you know, and I really particularly, I like this all the way through, but I particularly like lies are bred by distorted facts, because I feel like that's like one of those really straightforward, you know, here, let me tell you like it is. I do like that you put idiocy is bliss, and the answer of I cannot understand why. Like, why would you want to be ignorant? You know, why would you want to be an idiot when you have the potential to not only learn from different people, but you have the opportunity to learn from so many sources nowadays. You have the opportunity to open up your mind and not be that ignorant person. You know, so wonderful, right, and very well done. And
thank
did you,
you
want to see anything else
wanna,
about the poem?
I might just want to touch on what you said for a moment real quick. That reference to idiots is bliss is because I'm an idiot, and if I'm an idiot, why am I not happy? So, if idiocy is bliss, I can't understand why, because I should be the happiest man on this planet.
Oh, my gosh. I understand that feeling. I truly do. Although I don't think you're an idiot, but I can understand feeling that way because, honest to goodness,
with
the brain fart moments I have, I get it. But very cool. All right, Jarvis, I have gone ahead and I put up your right. So go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Okay. Well, I'm going to piggyback on this idiocy is bliss because I'm new to this. I'm 3 weeks in on this, and proverbs is proverbs to me. I was taught one proverb as a kid, and that's what stuck. So it's called Proverbs 3:1-5. We sit and judge others while we camouflage our own. The sin that we put before him, we do that on our own. It says in Proverbs 3 to hold his words so tight and lace them in all to your heart so you will not lose sight of what God wants from us each day. It's not that hard at all to keep close to you in case you start to fall. Don't let the enemy trap you and get you through off track, because he has control of this air until the day our Lord comes back. If you want my honest opinion, I will leave it. But you should ask yourself this very question as the time is moving fast. Will your eternity last? In Proverbs here, chapter 3, verses 1-5, it's very clear that he tells us all, stick with him and you won't die. End point.
Great, great read there, Jarvis, and a wonderful spiritual right. I like that you use the Lord with the all capital letters, with the idea of being the Lord above all lords, and him in the same way. I love this, like I said, is a wonderful spiritual right that speaks your thoughts and the importance of forming a bond. And I like how you speak on the idea that we need to learn and of course, you know, everybody believes differently, and I acknowledge and respect that, you know, but the idea of searching for, you know, what is that there's the higher power out there, what they want from you, and where your path is meant to walk. So great take on your chosen prompt, and very well done. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Well, Jarvis, I just have to applaud you on, you know, being, you know, coming out with your faith in the Lord. You know, that's a great thing to do. And, you know, I know that you're probably the happy person for that faith that you have in Jesus Christ and in God. And, you know, because my parents, well, my father is a preacher. They're saved. They're born-again Christians. And, you know, I see their faith in God and how it makes them happy every day. So I just have to applaud you on coming out and being real and, you know, and sharing your immense faith with everybody on the show. So bravo to you.
Absolutely. Great comment, Naomi. And Bill, your thoughts?
Yes, I want to say thank you first because the wisdom in this, the expression of faith is powerful, palpable, and not only the wisdom, but there's this emotional maturity that I really appreciate. And the conviction, not as in convicting someone of their wrongdoing, but as in the conviction of someone's solidarity with their faith and their belief. That's beautiful. You know, sometimes we say we believe these things or we say that's the right thing, but we're not able to defend why we believe it or what is driving the source of that. And so I just love the way that he's incorporated the scripture and the truth of it for this writing. You know, I might just confess as well, I went to a Baptist university where they were, I mean, it was a requirement that you have to go to chapel and you also have to study the scriptures. No ifs, ands, or buts. It's just part of the curriculum and you can't escape it. And here in Florida, I've led a ministry at my local church. And I really, these scripture verses or the verses that are inspired by scripture are really special to me. And I don't read enough scriptures every day. And when I do rifle through the Bible, it doesn't always stick out to me. And but when I read something like this, I'll know now, should I hear something referencing to this, hopefully I will remember it originated in the book of Proverbs, which is, you know, I love it when I can read something and learn from it. And I'll just make one other comment and get up. I noticed in the author notes that the writer talks about only being on the platform for a couple of weeks. Not being familiar with big words because he went to work at 13 and only has this amount of education. But I just want to call out the writer on that note because sometimes the most important things you can learn is from a hard day's work, and it might be more educational than sitting around in the classroom. I worked in tobacco fields in Western Kentucky before I became a professional writer, and that work was so hard, it inspired me to know that I never wanted to work
in the tobacco fields when I grew up, so I better learn some kind of skill if I don't want to be toiling out there in the sweat and the tobacco worms. So just the writer in those author notes, I want to, because it almost sounds self-deprecating, and it shouldn't.
Yeah.
And if the only thing you ever learn is this section of Proverbs, that might be all you need to get through life happy.
Thank you. I like that. I like that. Amen to that. And you're right. This is a in a very emotionally mature poem. So great comment there. And Jarvis, is there anything that you'd like to say about your poem?
It all means so much to me because when I was bad, I was bad, bar none. But when he did pull me from the pits of hell, because I am a chosen child of God, picked from pits of hell itself, and 8 years that I got to, I'm an evangelist, so I got to see the worst of the worst, to watch him move so miraculously around me and my family to the point where, why wouldn't I go 110 miles an hour when I was doing 100 for the enemy? And I just, I try to lay my heart on every point I write and give the glory where glory needs to be got. Thank y'all for having me.
Oh, wonderful. I'm glad you were inspired, and I'm glad you called in and read, and the same to you, Bill. I hope both of you honestly will not be strangers and will join us for other shows, because it's always such a, you know, well, of course, Bill, I know you've heard, I've heard you before, and it's always a delight to hang out with you. And Jarvis, it's been nice to get to know you, and you know, like I said, hopefully we'll be hearing more from you in the future.
Amen.
Oh,
amen.
I echo that. Please call it again. We'd love to have you.
Amen. Thank you so much.
All right. And let's see what we have next. Up next, we have some additions to some prompt proverbs by Diego Zarabrenic, and it goes like this.
Okay.
Thorns bury shallowly into one who walks slowly. Thorns bury deeply into one who walks fast. And thorns become roses for who's aiming for the sky. Kind words will unlock an iron door, but only if pronounced in good faith. We find good things behind those open gates. All cats are gray in the dark, but some smell better than others. Honor is the reward of virtue, but only if we behave virtuously, not expecting to be honored. A poor cat often holds good wine, but nectar and ambrosia were served to the gods in golden cups. Man is harder than iron, stronger than stone, and more fragile than a rose, and a woman knows when. What I wish best for myself, I wish for my friends too, and then I pray that they have the same wishes that I have. Don't throw away your old shoes until you have got new ones. But if they are unbearable, let them go, for heaven will provide you nicer shoes or teach you to walk gently and barefoot. He is not wise that is not wise for himself, but he who is wise for God is wise for himself and for the rest. A physician is an angel when employed, but a devil when one must pay him. So on average, he is a man. Be sure not to owe anything to the rich, and don't lend anything to the poor. However, we can show our gratitude to the rich man with a heartfelt smile, and because he only thinks of money and that's a cold life, I would also suggest that lending to the poor as opposed to gifting is a way of allowing him his dignity. And what's more, we can say that the universe will provide a way for paying back. Tell not all you know, believe not all you hear, do not all you are able, but be generous. Example is better than law sometimes. When two elephants fight, the grass gets trampled. The grass is flexible and clean. And what a creative look at all the different prompts and giving answers to them. And Bill, your thoughts?
You know, the I kind of admired, not kind of, I did actually admire how he took so many of the different prompt proverbs, because there were so many different things, and he galvanized them into this one piece. And it, just as the title says, I'm giving you the proverb, but I've added a little to it for some more context. And a poor cat often holds good wine. And, yeah, I mean, it's just so much wisdom imparted in each little stanza. And it brings up the proverb and also gives this wonderful compliment to it, which is full of the same sort of wisdom. And one of the things that I was thinking about as I was listening is how my mother just bought a new car. Now, Brett and my husband don't have to do with anything. If you had seen, she had drove this little Toyota around to the traveling nurse. And there's nothing fancy about that car, and you'd think, why would anybody want it? But it had over 300,000 miles on it. It was paid off. And so she's upset about having to buy a new car and have the car payments, because even in that old little piece of thing that she was driving, got so much mileage out of it, just as, you know, what it says about a poor cask. You know, it was something that may not look so well or seem this way on the surface may have something so viable behind it that we don't immediately understand or even recognize. So, you know, there's just the stanza that says, man is harder than iron. We're always taught, you know, we're just these fragile, mortal things made up of flesh and bone and various fluids. But at the same time, you know, iron, as hard as it is, so are we. I'd like to believe that is true the next time I trip over something or someone wants to take a hammer and hit me with it. Not that that happens so often.
Right, absolutely, I get that. But wonderful comment, thank you. And Jarvis, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, okay, wonderful. And your thoughts?
Absolutely, in all areas, something I should have read upon. Great job at what she did and how she brought it all and centered it onto what she was going through. Because you could feel her as it got deeper, the thoughts that would carry with her. And I love the part down that says, don't throw away your old shoes until you have got new ones. But if they are unbearable, let them go. Don't hold on to what you can't control. Forget your yesterdays. Focus on the now and let him have your tomorrows. And that's what spoke out to me. Absolutely loved it. Great job.
I do like that. Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, I found this so witty and so clever, and I even found it humorous in some parts, you know, like, example is better than law, and then he puts sometimes,
yeah.
And then, you know, when two elephants fight, the grass gets trampled, yeah, but grass is flexible. And then, you know, when he has all cats are gray in the dark, but some smell up better than others. Oh, that cracked me up. But, also, you know, the one with the shoes, you know, he's kind of, you know, laughing at that prompt a bit, you know, because, but if they're unbearable, let them go. And, you know, you could walk barefoot too, you know. So, yeah, really great, you know, in depth in many parts, you know, like when about the quote with the rich and the poor, that's very deep. But, you know, it has a light feel. He put in a light feeling, too, with that made me laugh. And I that made this write so much fun to read and to admire and to like. So wonderful, wonderful write here by this poet. Diego Serebrennick, maybe a new poet. I don't know him. But, wow, I'm looking forward to the other writes from him.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. I'm glad you brought up the humor because those lines really did. I got a big kick out of those. And I do like when wisdom is delivered with humor. So, you know, very cool. And up next, we have The Inquisitive Mind is Ours to Question. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. By Nikki Kelly.
Yeah, by Nikki Kelly. The Inquisitive Mind is Ours to Question. And she wrote to the prompt, "You do not always have to believe what you see. Snippets of control appear, which we are spoon-fed every day, media, socials, government, to believe to behave a certain way. Yet we have our own minds. Is ours to question, to have an opinion? There's always many sides to the one side is not the only one. The power is our own to debate, opposing views to agree, to disagree with their hidden agendas. They try to take this away from you and me. Free speech is the foundation of our culture, one we are built upon. Forebears fought hard for, and we hope to keep once we are gone. Some beliefs are abhorrent to you against what you stand for, you believe. Other politics, culture, religion, what we cannot say, how we must live. Free speech works both ways. When we're able to call out each other with divisive views, we believe, are to spread hate against one another. Those who wield power try to control the narrative for you and me. Our minds are ours to question and not to believe everything you see." End poem.
Wonderful read, Naomi, and a great write by Nikki Kelly. I really like how she speaks in the first stanza on the control that we are spoon-fed every day by the media, social media, and the government, and also the stanza where she says, "Free speech is the foundation of our culture, one we are built on." You know, it's important to acknowledge the freedoms that we are given, but at the same time, realize that there's still more for that we should be having, you know, and the freedom to, you know, not be under the control of media. If that is a freedom, I don't know. But anyways, but just a really wonderful, thought-provoking write and very well done. And Jarvis, your thoughts?
Yes, excellent, right? Great freedom of speech, how she laid it all out. And she's expressing how, I guess, the big brother can hold a thumb over us and can control it how they want to. And I really enjoyed the part that says the free speech works both ways when we're able to call each other out with devised views we believe, spread hate against one another, because in the world that we live in, it's terrible. Because we're taught hate. Even me coming from a deep South rooted, I was taught hate as a young kid because of another person's color. And as I grew up, I had to adjust myself because I knew I was taught wrong. So I commend her, man. I commend her awesome way of putting these words and laying it all down and saying, enough's enough. Great point, Naomi. Great point.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment. And, yeah, I can understand and relate to that. You know, many of us have grown up in cultures where we later realize that we have to relearn what we were taught. So great comment. And Bill, your thoughts?
Yeah, okay. And I love it. And I have this problem where my brain just jumps around all kinds of things. But I swear to you, it's relevant because just starting at the point of the first proverb, where you don't have to always believe what you see, and everything that backs that up in the following lines. When what we call seeing, we never see anything. It's just a light reflecting off the surface of something. And the reflection of that light bounces back into this very little tiny hole that's in our eyes. And when it does, it triggers this little optic nerve that sends a signal to our brain, and our brain interprets what that signal is. So we don't really see it. What we call seeing is really our brain interpreting a little pulse traveling on a nerve. So understanding that, it makes it all the more relevant how we're being spoon-fed by the media, the government, and everything, because those things influence the way we think, and it is the way we, if we are of a dark mind, we see dark things. If our mind is set on love and joy and the kind of things that Jarvis was reading about earlier, then those are the things that we see in life, because what we see is totally dependent on the way our mind works. And mind is a little broken, so I just see things in a really weird, broken kind of way. I'm sorry, guys.
Oh, no. I like it. It's very cool to have somebody on who thinks differently. So no need to apologize at all. We all learn from each other. Great observation. And wonderful comments, everybody. Thank you. And thank you to Naomi and Jean for always being my twisted sisters. Thank you to Jarvis and Bill for calling in and joining
thank
us for the whole show.
This is the most social contact I've had in 2 weeks. So thank you.
Oh, I'm glad to. Well, thank you. Thank you. And I will tell you that this is almost my only social comment or contact I've had in the past 6 years. So, you know, yeah, I can relate. And always wonderful to hang out with my fellow poets and poetry lovers. Thank you to Everyone who wrote for the show is listening now or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Make sure to keep an eye out on all the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. You can join us at 10:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time for Keeping It Brief. You can then join us at 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time for Art of Seduction with Naomi, Sarah, and myself. And 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time, you can join on Thursday, you can join Afasiana for Part Sinner, Part Saint. And thank you, everyone, and have a wonderful night.
Good night, thanks, man. Thank you. We
good
love
night.
You.
Thank you all.
Night, everybody.